It will be all chalk on the Riverwalk.
That is the great Ian Eagle on the call for CBS Sports last week when Auburn defeated Michigan State to advance to the Final Four in San Antonio. All four top seeds are still alive. Only the second time it's ever happened since the field expanded to 64 teams. The time before that, 2008, only twice. I'm Brian DeNovellis. Thanks for listening to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Let's get right to it, shall we? My guest is the aforementioned Ian Eagle. Pound for pound, one of the very best announcers in sports broadcasting. He will call the Final Four once again alongside Bill Raftery, Grant Hill, and sideline reporter Tracy Wolfson. Birdman, welcome to the pod.
Yeah, great to be with you, Brian. This is such a fun time of year, as we know. And I think the other part of it, you just laid it out, the unpredictable nature. Everyone says, well, this was predictable, but it's only happened one other time. So we could talk about chalk. We could talk about one seeds. It is not an every year occurrence. And while I know we're in a different phase of college basketball right now and something that we can get into, it still is something a little unique. And these are the four best teams in the country. There is no doubt about it. You look at KenPom and the eye test. It's not just the analytics. Watch these teams. They have been the best four teams in the nation this season.
Man, so much to unfold there, Ian. First of all, as you and I, college basketball fans, we're the same age. Yep. We want to see upsets, right? That's what makes this tournament so great. And yet, this NCAA tournament, we didn't see a lot of upsets. We got our first buzzer beater, one, yep, in about 6 years. So we want upsets, but yet we want the best teams in the Final Four. We don't want to see that 12 seed make it to the Final Four and wreck the party. So I guess when you get to the Final Four, although we didn't get the upsets, we got the four best teams. And for my money, that's a good thing.
Yeah, March Madness, it means different things to different people. I do think that there are years that you remember simply for the upsets or the little team that could. And that can carry you. That can carry a university. It can carry a fan base. It can carry an alumni base. I get it. When Florida Atlantic goes to the Final Four, San Diego State, the most recent cases of it. But prior to that, Loyola Chicago or George Mason, All of that is super. And it's a sweet storyline and narrative that emerges. And for a stretch of time, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we get to know individuals and schools that we may not have been as familiar with before the tournament began. This year, based on a number of factors, I do think there is a separation right now in college basketball where the NIL has played a large role in teams getting the best talent available. And I do think the transfer portal, as active as it is, some coaches are really excellent at evaluating talent and seeing how that talent would fit in to their program. But you have to also look at it through the lens of who's getting these players and what are they looking for. Duke has a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans, as they normally do. What's the difference this year with Duke? Well, you could say they have the best player in the country in Cooper Flagg. They do. But they also have the right pieces around Cooper Flagg, and they have three transfers that were not the stars of their respective teams, but they've all helped and assisted in Duke becoming the team that they developed into. So with James and with Brown and with Gillis, you're talking about Tulane, Syracuse, and Purdue. None of those three players were the best player on their team that they transferred from. But John Shire and his coaching staff saw something in the three of them that they believed could help their team get over the hump. And here we are now at the Final Four, and they were right. Their evaluation was correct. Now, they still have blue chip talent, as we know, with Flagg and with Knipple and with Malawach and what we've seen Proctor do in this NCAA tournament. But it's not an exact science. It's not just go get the best players. Kansas paid a lot of money in NIL. It didn't work.
Right.
The chemistry didn't work. So there is still another element to this: coaching, development, and then camaraderie and chemistry. And all of that is still one of those unspoken layers of the game that you can't predict until you actually see it out there on the court.
So I'm going to follow up with that. And I agree with all that, right? Just because you have the most money, we see it in any sport, baseball, sure, football, basketball, just because you have the most money doesn't mean you have the best roster. It takes a lot more than that. And you mentioned, yep, that all, but in the, unless something is done, and unless something is done to kind of curb what's happening here, salaries, right?
Yes.
Your paid basketball players going skyrocketing as we talk. I think your value just went up $500,000, by the way. While this is happening, are we going to see, if it stays, less of these Cinderellas?
Right. Yeah, I think that's the concern. And like anything in life, there's often a recency bias where you see something and then you decide, well, that's it. We're never going back. We don't know. I want to see a 3 to 5 year period, truly collect the data. And let's also see if there is a correction in some way, if there are regulations put in place where there are slots that teams are given that, similar to the NBA, but you're slotted in for your number one target. And then the number two target is at a different financial figure, and down and down and down. Now, look, we know resources at the major universities are going to be higher, but they always were. They were. It wasn't that they were paying the players, but the chance at exposure at a large university compared to a smaller university, there were players that slipped through the cracks and still do, by the way. Yeah, let's take this Auburn team as an example. What Bruce Pearl has done. He has one player who you're very familiar with in Tahad Pettiford, mm-hmm, that was a legitimate high school star that he recruited hard, that he saw something in, and now he's a part of the Auburn team. The rest of that team is either JUCO, Division II, or mid-major products that came together with Bruce Pearl and his staff, seeing something from them that they felt would be good for Auburn basketball. Now, collectively, they've become one of the best teams in the country. But Denver Jones could have gone basically anywhere, mm-hmm, and it would have been a step up from where he was playing. And you can go on and on. Jani Broom, same deal. So my point being, you still have to be able to look at talent and then develop it and cultivate it. Yes, the bigger universities will have more chances, and they can make mistakes. That's the other part too. You can make a mistake and then still have the money the following year. A smaller school makes a mistake, they might be stuck for 2 or 3 years because they committed a certain amount of funds and now they can't get out of it. So it's messy. It's not simple. I don't think this is it, that we'll never see another 14 seed, 15 seed, 16 seed. We're going to get upsets in this tournament. It's basketball. It's a one-shot deal. It's a one and done. You could have a bad day any day. But this year was the year that we just didn't get basically any of them, or a whole lot of them. There were, right, still storylines, by the way. I did the game Sweet 16. Ole Miss had a chance to make its first Elite Eight, and they had a lead in the second half against Michigan State, a sizable one, mm-hmm, 9-point lead, and they couldn't hold on, and they didn't get to experience that thing that would have been the first time ever. So there were still chances at firsts, but we didn't have the typical Cinderella emerge that we've seen in previous years.
Well, let's talk about this game, you preparing. Listen, you, like I said, one of the best in the business. I mean, you've already prepared for this.
Yes.
When did your preparation begin for this Final Four?
You know, it's funny. You get some premonitions along the way, and there's no way to prepare for 68 teams as a play-by-play announcer. There's no way. I can watch college basketball, which I do throughout the season. But at the level that's required preparation-wise, unless you sit down and commit yourself to doing your board and your chart, you're talking about, for me, a 6 to 8 hour process of sitting down and doing one team and really getting into the weeds of learning everything that you can possibly learn about each player on the roster, about the coach, about the storylines of the season. So that's why it's a fire drill every year when you get the phone call at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. Used to be a phone call. Now it's really a text on Sunday of, hey, you're going to this particular region or city. And this year we drew Raleigh, and I had a sense Raleigh was a possibility just based on Duke. So a few weeks ago, I committed the 6 to 8 hours and did a Duke board. And I thought to myself, I had a little bit of time in between NBA assignments and college assignments. I thought, you know what? I should probably do a Houston board because they're legitimately good. And I could easily see them in San Antonio. Maybe I'll get them in the early rounds. Maybe I won't. So I did.
Okay.
And then
2 for 2.
I said, maybe I'll do an Auburn board. They were number one in the country at the time. I said, I haven't seen them a whole lot. I've seen them a few times, but let me dig in a little deeper. So
in your free time on the plane going.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Download games, watch on my computer, jot down notes, then create a chart that I use in game with number, name, background, high school, height, weight, and then scouting information on each player.
Just in case.
That's all just in case. And I said to myself, I'm going to hedge. And if it doesn't work out, I'm not going to get angry that I committed all this time. It will have been productive for me. So I did it for Auburn as well. And then we drew Florida in the opening round. And guess what? 3 weeks ago, when the Gators started to get on their roll, I said to myself, let me do a board. So again, each board for me, depending upon how much information, Duke probably took a little less time than Auburn did or Houston did. But you're still talking about legitimate 6, 7, 8 hours to really do it the right way. And I just happened to hit on it. I don't know if I should go to Vegas or not, but I committed to those teams. And here we are in the Final Four, and I've got those four teams.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Now that's not something you do every year.
No, it really was based on scheduling more than anything else. And just the way my schedule worked out with college hoops, we don't have the SEC anymore at CBS. So I'm not seeing those teams. I used to see Kentucky every year. I feel like I did the Kentucky-Florida game 9 out of 10 years at one stretch. I just happened to always get that matchup on CBS, but we no longer have it. So you have to make a conscious effort to go out of your way to watch that conference because I'm not going to stumble upon them during the regular season. And in this case, because Florida and Auburn were so good, I just decided to make a go of it.
Well, thank goodness over the summer during your spare time in the off season, you didn't do a Syracuse or a Seton Hall board.
I did have Seton Hall this year, Brian. I had Seton Hall St. John. So I do have a Seton Hall board that I'm not sure will be of any use for next year if there's going to be any carryover. But
yeah,
I did see Shaheen Holloway's squad. They actually played fairly well at the Garden against St. John's and turned out to be the Big East clincher. They were very competitive.
Yeah, that's one of those games. Like you said, you never know. And nerves in a game, right? St. John's in the tournament had their worst game of the season.
They did.
You know, at the most inopportune time, hands down.
And that's another reminder about this. Look, it wasn't considered a major upset because it was Arkansas and it was St. John's. And if you didn't know the seedings, if you knew nothing about the two teams and you just watched the game, I think most people would have said, well, Arkansas is the higher seed, right? No, St. John's is the higher seed. And they had a tremendous regular season. And whatever happened towards the end of that game, Rick Pitino's decision in regards to R.J. Lewis clearly felt very strongly that it wasn't working and they were going to have to find a different way to win. And then R.J. declaring for the draft, potentially transfer portal, who knows how it's all going to play out. But that is a reminder that this is not smooth. Just because a college basketball team has got it going, in one day, all of that work, that entire resume can be shattered very quickly, and you become an afterthought. There have been really elite teams that did not get to the Final Four, did not win a championship. I don't want to say they're forgotten. They're not. They're not completely forgotten, but they're not thought of in the terms that they would have, because legacy, as we know, is usually equated to that trophy and winning the championship. And that just shows you how razor thin the margins are when it comes to this event.
A couple of more minutes here with Ian Eagle. Ian, I know you're getting ready to go to San Antonio as we speak. So you're doing another game with legendary Bill Raftery, who you know, he's a Hall of Famer. We know that. Yes. Hall of Fame person.
Yes.
I mean, how many games would you estimate you've done over the years from NBA to college? And, you know, what is it like? What's the chemistry like alongside him?
We tried to figure out the math, Brian. We might be in the general vicinity of 500 games together between the Nets and college. We did NBA TV games together, playoff games. We did FIBA World Championship basketball games. So you say the level, we did it at some point, local, national, international. The reality for me is, this is not a partnership when it comes to rap. This is a friendship. He is one of my best friends. And it's not even something that I would say, oh, the last 5 years, it's really gone to another level. No, I'm talking about 31 years of friendship. I was a kid when I got the Nets job. And Bill, as you know, Brian, is so welcoming and so inclusive. I was the radio guy for a year. I ended up moving to TV the next year to work with Bill. And it felt like we had already worked together for 20 years. I was only 25, but it felt like we had worked together for so long, because you develop a shorthand with someone that you know where they're going. You know how to help get them there. And the best part of it all, Brian, is the relationship that you hear on the air is the actual relationship off the air. It's a lot of busting chops. It's a lot of love. It's a lot of respect. And it's a lot of shared history. He is an amazing human being. He's a medical marvel. And I'm talking about his abilities sometimes post-midnight, post-dinner. But he's a joy. And in addition, that word is key, because what you end up feeling is that emotion when you're around him and doing a game with him. It's a joyful experience. There's a reason why I think fans feel attached in some way, because it does feel like someone that you could be sitting at a bar with or on your living room couch and just chatting about basketball and chatting about life. So that's really the secret sauce when it comes to Raf. And we're really fortunate that we've had this time together. Grant Hill is terrific, fantastic. He has been such a joy to work with as well. And Tracy Wolfson on the sideline. We really enjoy each other's company. And the hope is that comes across on TV, because it is real and authentic.
Oh, 100%. What are you most looking forward to with broadcasting these games? Because like you said, we have the four best teams in the country, the four best teams who, you know, according to KenPom efficiency, since we've been doing that, four of the top 10 teams ever, Florida versus Auburn, Houston versus Duke. What are your thoughts?
Well, let's start with Houston Duke, just because you're talking about the best offense in the country against the best defense in the country. So without even knowing the two teams involved, once you get to that level, you know something's got to give. Is it the Duke offense that is superior and they still do it their way? Or is it the Houston defense that sets the tone? The difference this time around, normally when you talk about the best offense in any sport, in college basketball, it usually means, well, but the defense isn't quite there. Duke's defense is outstanding.
Yeah.
Houston, known as a great defensive team, Kelvin Sampson, he preaches it. And it's not even a negotiable there. If you show up at Houston, you know you're going to have to play defense under Kelvin Sampson. The difference this year, they're sneaky good offensively. They're a really good shooting team. They have three players that shoot above 40% from three-point territory. So this isn't a team that is looking to beat you necessarily 56-53. they can get it done offensively. So I'm just curious how that game plays out. Duke, you could say they're not as tested as some other teams because of the ACC. I don't think it's a fair statement. They did everything that you could possibly ask of them out of conference in this tournament so far.
And they've looked one of the best like offensive teams in Alabama.
100%. Everybody coming off the Sweet 16 game, what was the reaction? Ooh, look out. Alabama, they're capable of putting up 100+. And they were stymied. Mark right. Sears was stymied against Duke. So just really interested to see how that game plays out and who can do what they do better than the other team. The Auburn-Florida game, the familiarity is such a key narrative here. They're not going to surprise one another. You have the additional storyline of Bruce Pearl and Todd Golden. Todd Golden was the director of basketball operations at Auburn in Bruce's first year. He's best friends with Stephen Pearl. There's a lot of connective tissue. And even the way they've built their teams are very similar. They went to the transfer portal hard. Both teams did. And they've been very successful in the transfer portal. So the fact that it's two SEC teams, they were the best conference in the country this year. They've earned it. They both look like the best team in the country at different stages of the year. Auburn, for a long stretch of time, from mid-January to early March, they were the clear number one team in the country. And then their defense took a hit. And then Florida emerges in the SEC tournament where you think to yourself, oh, they could win the whole thing. And the one thing that has struck me with Florida, having seen them early in the tournament against UConn and then watching that Texas Tech game, they don't flinch even during moments where you think, all right, it's been a nice run. What they did at the end of that Texas Tech game, first of all, following the analytics, Todd Golden, who believes in that stuff, he intentionally fouls in the second half twice. Mm-hmm. And they missed the front end of a 1-1. So two empty trips. They score on both. Clayton just takes over. Yeah. Houck makes big shot after big shot. If he doesn't do that, if he just goes straight away, hey, we're just going to play defense here, we might be talking about Texas Tech right now, and we might not be talking about chalk at the Riverwalk. It was that close to going the other way. So give a lot of credit to that coaching staff for seizing the moment and recognizing what was required in the moment.
Ian, this has been great. Thank you for taking time out of your extremely busy schedule. I feel like we just did a pregame for the Final Four.
It's helpful for me. I got my thoughts organized, categorized. I'm good to go. I could do the games right now.
You can. It's a win-win. So appreciate it. I know I'll be watching, and all of our listeners will as well. This is a great time of the year.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, and have a great broadcast.
Anytime, Brian. Always enjoy spending time with you. I bemoan the fact that you don't spell your name with a B-R-I-A-N, because that would make it easier for people to understand my name. I would just say, take off the B-R. But the sound of your name is good enough for me. I can just say, take off the B-R, and we got Ian.
I like that. Ian, you're the man. Thank you.
All the best, bud.
All right, the great Ian Eagle. You know, I didn't even get into his son, Noah Eagle, who is really making a name for himself. And Noah is so well-prepared, so well-versed, a chip off the old block. Yeah, you can say Noah got the job because of his dad. Maybe that had something to do with it. Who cares? Who cares? Because you would do the same thing for your son or daughter, just like I'm doing the same thing for my son or daughters. And the bottom line is, the cream rises to the top, and Noah Eagle got his foot in the door. He is rising to the top. So if you have a game at some point and you're listening to Noah Eagle, you know he is going to be prepared. You know he's going to do an A-plus job, and he is amazing as well. I mean, so many areas we could have gone there with Ian, and it's a joy to have him on the broadcast. And to have Raftery on the broadcast. Once again, Grant Hill does a great job. It is an A-plus team, and Tracy Wolfson as a sideline reporter. So can't wait for the games. Thanks to Ian Eagle. I mean, literally, he's got a flight to catch to San Antonio and said he could squeeze in some time. So he and I go back to our days of covering the Nets when we'd see each other during the glory days of the Nets with Jason Kidd and Richard Jefferson and Vince Carter and so forth, and Kenyon Martin and all those gangs. And we formed a friendship that has lasted this long. So I thank Ian for coming on, and we will be watching Florida Auburn, Houston Duke. For my money, I think it will be Duke versus Florida. That's the championship game I picked. I think in my bracket, I picked Florida over Duke. But after seeing Duke in person and watching them more, I think they are the most complete team. I think they are the best team there. Although any one of these four teams can win it. They really can. But and they all have the talent to win it. I just trust Duke a little bit more. I think they bring it on both ends more than the other teams. I think this is the most physical Duke team we've seen. I think they have a physicality of a Big East team. And I think that it's not just Cooper Flagg, but when you have Cooper Flagg and he's the best player on the floor, arguably, he makes everyone else around him better. The supporting cast is great. Con Knipl is like an old school man, offensively, defensively, he's in your face. He's physical. He's talented. He's quick. He defends. I just think my prediction right now, I think Duke wins it and cuts down the nets and beats Florida in the championship game. Although, if Florida has the last shot and Walter Clayton Jr. has the ball in his hands, I wouldn't bet against that because Florida will be sitting pretty if they are in that situation. Chance to win the game, and the ball is in the hands of Walter Clayton Jr., they will be in good shape. But my prediction, Duke over Florida in the championship game. A couple of other things I want to get to. The portal season has begun, and guys are starting to come to our tri-state teams. And two people in particular, Bryce Hopkins signing with St. John's. The other news happening on Wednesday, Seton Hall adding their first transfer in the portal in Bud Clark from Merrimack. So let's start with Bryce Hopkins. If Bryce Hopkins is healthy, and he says he is, he said the time off this year had his knee at 100%. He feels healthy. He's ready to go. I'm sure St. John's did their due diligence. I'm sure the medical, you know, records look good. They had him in for a workout, and he passed with flying colors. Teaming Bryce Hopkins with Zubi Ejiofor is an absolute double-double waiting to happen for both of them. It is absolutely the best 1-2 punch in the Big East on April 2nd, and it will likely be the best 1-2 punch in the Big East on November 2nd. That is how good they are. If Hopkins is healthy, that is how dynamic they are. You're talking about two first-team All-Big East players, and both, when healthy, you're talking about two likely candidates for Big East Player of the Year next year. That's how good they are. I find it hard to believe that anyone, even UConn, will be able to find, or Creighton will be able to find, you know, a better matchup through the portal or wherever they may get them. They're not going to get them in-house, okay? Not these two, not like this. So that also puts them in contention for, you know, one of the top two tandems in the entire country. But I'm not going to go that far. It's too early for that. This team, St. John's, they are putting together a really nice team for next year in spite of the loss of R.J. Lewis. So when you lose a player like R.J. Lewis of that caliber, how do you replace him? Well, Josan Sanon is a guy who comes right in, who can make shots, a former five-star player who we thought was going to be a one-and-done at Arizona State, has a nice freshman year. Lo and behold, he's not going to the NBA draft. He comes to St. John's. So you add Josan Sanon and you add Bryce Hopkins. Now you're having a really, really strong portal season that puts you on par with what you did last year by adding Kadari Richmond, Aaron Scott, Davon Smith through the portal, right? Josan Sanon, Bryce Hopkins, there's more to come. I know you lost R.J. Lewis. a little bit of a surprise, but not when you think about what happened in the last game of the season being benched. There was probably more to that behind the scenes than meets the eye. And then you lose Brady Dunlap. We wish him well. It's tough to lose who arguably would have been your best shooter coming back. But this team already has put itself in position with the money they have, with the backing they have, with the coach they have. They're putting together a team that will likely be preseason number one in the Big East. Time will tell. But so far, you know, you're talking about two of the prime players in the transfer portal that Rick Pitino has gotten in Sinan and Bryce Hopkins. So A plus in terms of transfers. I want to talk about Seton Hall. This is a team that for years, Seton Hall fans have been saying, we need a true point guard. We need a true point guard. It has been one of the great mysteries as to how this team has succeeded without necessarily having a true point guard. You know, they did fine under the years of Willard, right? He inherited a guy like Jordan Theodore. Then he couldn't get a point guard. Then he made Isaiah Whitehead his point guard and Kadeem Carrington. Then he brought in Quincy McKnight. So we saw him doing things with combo guards and turning them into point guards with the help of Shaheen Holloway. Then, of course, he had Kadari Richmond. Not your true point guard, but boy, did he turn into a lead guard who was fantastic, who was first team all Big East, right? We saw what he did at Seton Hall for 3 years. We saw what he did at St. John's. So it's not like Seton Hall hasn't had somebody running the point, but a true point guard in the sense of what we think of as a true point guard, this is what they got in Adam Bud Clark. Bud Clark was the former Northeast Conference Rookie of the Year 2 years ago at Merrimack. Merrimack then goes to the MAC, and Bud Clark takes his game from Northeast Conference Rookie of the Year to first team All-MAC. The second leading scorer in the MAC, averaged almost 20 points a game and 6 assists, 4.5 rebounds. What really gets me excited is his ability to defend and almost 3 steals a game. Look, he is a shooting point guard. What was Shaheen Holloway? What was Andre Barrett? They were scoring point guards who could lead the team, run the offense, and get their shot off anywhere, inside, outside, and they could shoot it. That's what Bud Clark is. Okay, so he's not 6'6" like Kadari Richmond. He's 5'10", more like Andre Barrett. He was on campus over the weekend on Sunday. Apparently, he loved the coaching staff. And I think that with Seton Hall's new revenue sharing, they reportedly have about $5 million that they have at their dispense, at their disposal, the $4 million in revenue sharing plus another million in NIL. That collective will allow Seton Hall to get more players, to be more attractive to more better players. Point guard was the number one priority for Shaheen Holloway in this offseason. He has struck an A-plus point guard in the portal in Bud Clark. Mission accomplished. Check that off the list. All right? Top priority, getting a top point guard. They got one in Bud Clark. People are wondering, can he make that jump? I think they will. This guy's a winner. He's a Philadelphia kid from the Philadelphia Catholic League. He's tough. He's gutsy. He brings energy on offense and defense. This is not a situation where Shaheen Holloway is not going to know who is running his offense. He is built in the mold of what Shaheen Holloway wants and expects in a point guard. Check this one off the list for Shaheen Holloway. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And thank you for spreading the word of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I couldn't do it without you or my sponsor, Mike Supa from RE/MAX Revolution. Give him a call if you are in the market for a house down the Jersey Shore, 201-988-2577. And tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Enjoy the games, everyone. So long.